Morning. The House Education Committee will come to order. The time is 8:06 a.m. and today we are joined by Representative Ledoux, Representative Drummond, Representative Sadler, Representative Peggy Wilson, myself, Representative Gaddis, Representative Reinbold, Representative Seaton. On our agenda today, we'll be hearing Senate Bill 41 and continuing with House Bill 151. We'll begin with House Bill 151. We'll let the bill sponsor get set up. Anytime you're ready.
Okay, so we're going to hold
go
questions.
Ahead.
Hold questions till the end. Are we going to? Okay.
I apologize. The bill sponsor would like me to have our committee hold our questions till the end, so she can get through this process. We've worked on it two or three times before, so we'll hold until we get there.
Okay, my name is Laura Reinbold, and I represent Eagle River. And thanks once again, Education Committee, for hearing House Bill 151. Really appreciate your attention. Our committee, like I said, is tasked with a very, very, very important mission to oversee the laws of education in our state. And although there are pockets of greatness all over the state in education, as a whole, we can do better as a state. Instituting a grading system will help our schools know exactly how they're doing and help potentially be a catalyst for change. The Parental Education Information Act is House Bill 151. Basically, it's a consumer report for education. It creates school accountability through transparency by providing a simple and comprehensive grading system. The performance designated criteria. The Department of Education shall establish by regulation that criteria that accounts for improvement for the student's achievement for assigning an annual grade performance designated A through F, just like the students get on their own report cards. On the slide that you'll see in front of you, you'll see the slide that says Parental Education Information Act grading criteria. So the department shall assign a performance designation based on 2 years of data collected under AS 1403123 as follows. First, 50% combined student achievement data in reading, writing, math, and science. Those are all existing tests. Second, 25% individual learning gains of all students, reading, writing, and math. Third, 25% individual learning gains in reading and math, if any, achieved by students who scored at or below the 25th percentile on a standard statewide standards-based assessment in reading or math. This bill currently, with schools less than 20 full-time students, will be exempt from this section. The impacts of the grading system. It can bring clarity and understanding. It's providing a consumer report cards to our communities. It can help motivate improvement. It can spark community widespread support. I was in Colorado and visiting my son, and it was amazing the attention that this got. They decided in Colorado to do it as a co-op. And I happened to sit with somebody whose school was number one, and it was amazing to see the celebration, the energy that she was talking about, you know, when the schools had met, you know, become a top performer. So it was very, very exciting. It has a potential to increase parental involvement, which, as we all know, has been a key component they've noticed in many of the successful schools, getting parents involved. And if a school is not where they want it to be, it has the opportunity to be a catalyst for change. And we have several people on the line right now. Dr. Christy Havantes is going to share a few more slides with you right now. We also have Juan Copa online and Bob Griffin. And I'm going to do a brief introduction to Dr. Christy Havantes. She has a widespread Florida. She's been working in Florida for many, many years. And I'll go over her resume just briefly with you. First of all, she graduated, Dr. Christy Havantes graduated summa cum laude from St. Cloud University with a Bachelor of Science in Education and a minor in Mathematics. She is a certified teacher. She also has a Master's in Public Administration from the University of Minnesota. She has a Doctor of Philosophy in Public Administration from Florida State University. She was Assistant Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Education, and since 1999 to current, she sets education policy in Florida. And I really want to thank Dr. Christy Havantes for being online. So, Christy, are you online?
Yes, I am, Representative Rifle.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and start with your brief presentation, and then and I know you'll be available for questions as well.
Thank you, Representative Reinholt, members of the committee. There are just two slides that I wanted to show and highlight with you stemming from previous conversations that we've listened to in this committee regarding House Bill 151. The first one is just to demonstrate the school grades by school type and the number of A and B schools compared to C, D, and F schools. This is a complete representation of all of the A, B, C, D, and F school letter grades. We had shown a line chart before that did not include C school letter grades, but wanted to provide a chart here that does show that those C schools are depicted as well, and this is just the most recent year of school level data. And we have charts similar to this for all previous years. The next chart on slide number 8, the one that I really want to highlight. This is the question that we have been getting regarding there are 175 to 200 D and F schools, and it looks like those schools have persisted over the years. Before we explain this chart, I want to highlight the fact that Florida substantially raised their standards on what it meant to be proficient from the 2011 school year to the 2012 school year. So the standard for an individual student to be proficient, which is half the school grading calculation, went up dramatically between these 2 years. But what this chart depicts is along the left-hand side, there are A, B, C, D, and F schools in 2011. The schools that are stated in green, so for example, the schools that are listed as A, B in 2011, 108 of those schools showed up in the A column or earned an A school letter grade in 2012. All of the schools highlighted in the yellow box, the 701 A schools, remained an A school in 2012. And then the schools highlighted in the pink boxes are schools that declined the letter grade. And keep in mind that this is a substantial increase of standards from 1 year to the next because the bar on proficiency went up. But as you can see, specifically for F schools and D schools, as had been highlighted in our previous conversation, that not many schools that earn a D or an F remain D or an F the following year. There is a lot of movement of those schools up and down based on the instructional practices and the instructional leadership of that school from year to year. So we do not have that many consistently low-performing schools in Florida. They actually move in and out of that category. So at this time, I'll turn it back to Representative Reinbold and open for questions.
Do we have any questions?
Representative Wilson.
I'm just not quite understanding this graph here. If I'm looking at the B schools, there's 108 in 2011, but I can't figure out where, if there was, I don't understand it at all.
Okay, let me try and walk through it again one more time. In 2011, there were 108 B-schools that improved one letter grade to be an A school. So even though Florida raised the standards on what it meant to be proficient, there were still 108 schools that were a B in 2011 and are now an A in 2012. There were 63 B schools in 2011 in that yellow box that remained a B school in 2012, even though there was a substantial increase in the standards. So if you look at any of the green boxes, those are schools that improved a letter grade. So if you look at the C going vertical on the left-hand side, there were 31 schools that were a C in 2011 that are an A in 2012, 31 schools that were a C in 2011 that are a B in 2012. There were schools that did decline a school letter grade. So, for example, if you look at that top row of schools, there were 317 schools that were an A in 2011 that dropped to a B in 2012. And again, the main reason that we saw a decrease in school letter grades from the 2011 to the 2012 school year is because Florida changed their assessments and their standards to require a much standard level of proficiency for all students.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. Maybe it would help if we knew what the, so we know what the green means. The green means that they went up a grade. What does the yellow mean?
That they maintained their grade. So there were 701 schools that were an A in 2011 that maintained an A in 2012. There were 63 schools that were a B in 2011 that maintained their B in 2012. And all of them on that diagonal yellow box are schools that maintained their letter grade.
Okay, and so what are the, what is the purple?
The, those are schools that declined a letter grade. So there were 317 A schools in 2011 that declined to a B school letter grade in 2012. And there were 148 B schools in 2011 that declined a letter grade to be a C school in 2012.
So follow up.
Please.
So we start with 701 schools, or where do we start?
I'm not sure what the question is, but what we are looking at here is the question that we had at the last committee meeting where we, where this bill was presented, was do all the DNF schools remain DNF? Or do all the A and B schools remain A and B schools? And what this chart shows is what was the school's letter grade in 1 year compared to what's the school's letter grade in the following year. So all this is showing is a snapshot from where was the school in 2011 and where they resulted in 2012.
Okay,
so, the first thing we're looking at is which schools were A, B, C, D, and F in 2011, and then where did they end up in 2012?
Okay, so let me go through this to see if I understand what you're saying. So in let's look at the B grade on the left, and 108 of those schools went from a B to an A, and then go straight across, and that 63 schools remained the same, and 148 schools, what happened to them?
They decreased the letter grade to a C.
Okay, and then, but the D and F schools, are you saying that there were no D and F schools that year?
There were no B schools that declined to a D or an F.
Oh.
So if you look at each row tells you in 2011, that top row shows you what happened to A schools in 2012.
Okay.
The second row tells you what happened to a B school in 2012. The third row tells you what happened to a C school in 2012.
Okay, so we're saying that 108, going back over there, 108 schools went from a B to an A. 63
Correct.
Schools stayed the same. 148 schools got worse. They're 148, and they were a B before, but this time now they're a C. And then no schools got worse as far as the D and F. They just remained whatever they were.
Well, there were no B schools that declined to a D or an F in that current year.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in my packet, you know, although it's on the screen, what I have is the middle schools. The same chart for the middle schools. And it's quite interesting that in every category, B, C, and D, there were more schools that declined a letter grade than increased a letter grade. And so if everyone has that in their packet, they should be aware. But I guess my confusion comes when we're talking about we've changed the assessment criteria. Do you have this same information from 2010 to 2011 so that we can see what the effect of this grading system might be if we're not changing standards?
Yes, we absolutely have data. We have these year-to-year comparisons for every year going back to the early 2000s, so we can demonstrate each year how this has impacted it. But one of the things to keep in mind is every couple of years, Florida raises the standard on what it takes to earn an A, B, C, or an F school letter grade. So there will be multiple years where we're demonstrating we raise the bar on what it means to earn an A. So we continuously are raising the standards or increasing it. We can show you and demonstrate what the impact is going to be, but one of the key things to remember is Alaska will be setting its own standards for what it means to be proficient and its own grading criteria for how many points are required to earn an A, B, C, D, or an F letter grade. So this is just impact data from another state, but Alaska will have the discretion, and those decisions will be made by this committee or the department.
Representative Seaton, follow-up.
Madam Chair, I really hope that we could get the 2010 to 2011 data explained this way so we don't have this mix of standards. I mean, of course, we AYP, adequate yearly progress standards, have changed every year as well. So, you know, the criteria that we've been assessing have had increasing standards every year for proficiency. But, you know, I mean, I just don't understand. I mean, I understand, but every category, I mean, there was 8 B schools that went to an A in for the middle grades. 20 remained the same, but 69 decreased. So does everyone have that?
Yeah, I gave it in the first package, and then we swapped out, Jim swapped out. We had middle, high, and elementary, and we just decided to pick one. And that's why in the second packet that we passed out, there was confusion on Friday of switching out the packets.
Oh, okay. But, well, I guess I still have the first one that's comparing middle schools. So that's B schools, you know, what's that, 8 times as many schools decreased a letter grade than went up a letter grade when they were a B school. There were, in the C categories, there were 7 times as many schools decreased the letter grade than went up a letter grade. And in D schools, there were twice as many schools decreased the letter grade than went up a letter grade, and that's in the middle school. So I just want to make sure that we get the full understanding of what it means when the criteria were not being increased so we can see how the influence went. So I appreciate you sending those and indicating whether the criteria went up from one year to next. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
Okay, I'm going to preface this by saying that I generally like the idea of grades. But with that being said, I don't see how we can look at this stuff and say the schools have improved because of the grades, or the schools have not improved because of the grades. I mean, because we're probably going to see in some other context the same data being used to show that school choice works in Florida, or the, I know Florida has a good reading retention program. So while I like the idea, because I kind of like the idea of seeing exactly where a school is on some sort of standardized way, I guess I'm not really buying that these schools have necessarily improved because of the grading system. They may very well have improved, but I don't know if it, I don't, for me, this isn't showing me that they've improved because of the grading system.
Dr. Christie?
Yes, that's a very good point to make. And with social science research, you are not able to designate one specific policy as the absolute causal factor, but we do know from looking at data prior to the implementation of the school grading system and data post-implementation of the school grading system that the percent of our students that are improving on the National Assessment for Educational Progress in both fourth and eighth grade reading and math have gone up substantially. So we know just looking pre and post school grading system that there was a big increase in student performance a couple years following school grading when there weren't as many other reforms in Florida occurring at that time.
Follow up, Representative Ledoux.
Okay, so when, refresh my memory again as to when the school grading system went into effect, and also when the third grade retention program went into effect. If you weren't reading by the completed the third grade, you didn't pass. And also when school choice went into effect in Florida.
For school grading, they went into effect in 1999. There were often multiple choice programs available, including opportunity scholarships for students who were in failing schools. So part of the school grading program was if any school earned 2 F's in any four-year period, the student was eligible to move to another higher-performing school. So those policies kind of came in place at the same time because they were the option for students to get out of failing schools as a result of our accountability system. The third grade retention policy did not come into effect until 5 years later. So third grade retention did not play a part in those initial improvements in student performance.
Thank you.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got an article from the Tampa Bay Times of about a year ago that tells us that Florida's school system has tumbled out of the top 10 due to budget cuts and stalling national test scores. I'd like to see all of these accountability programs aligned with the situation with the budget in this particular state. Their governor was urging lawmakers to restore $1 billion in education funding after he'd backed the previous year's cuts, and they're falling in NAEP scores in all 14 NAEP-related categories tracked by Education Week. So I'm not sure that this system is doing Florida any good, and particularly when it's tied to the budget situation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Would you like to respond to that?
Dr. Christie? Did you understand the question?
Yes, I did understand the question. You are correct. Florida's NAEP scores did decline slightly during the 2011 administration. Part of the concern or problem is since Governor Bush has left office, there has not been as strong of leadership on education reform. So we've been doing a lot of work, as we have been in other states, to maintain the rigor of the accountability system in Florida, which is part of the reason we saw a big increase in the requirements
for proficiency standards from 2011 to 2012 is because we need to maintain the rigor of our accountability system to maintain high expectations for our students, which may not have been as strong as they were when the school grading system was first implemented back in the late 90s.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I want to say too that overall I'm for this, and I kind of agree because I know that and if you could tell us all of the things, not just the things that Representative Seaton mentioned, but all of the things that Florida is trying now. Evidently, now I don't know where you were when this. When this all started in the realm of where you stacked up in with the other states, and I guess if we could say that this grading system is raised you up in that realm of how you stacked up with other states, and at the same time. Where you stacked up as far as funding per student and some other things like that so that we could see all the details that were happening, because I'm sure that there was teacher in service that was going on to try to help develop the teachers to do a better job. There was help for individual students to so that the teachers could help them do a better job. So there was a lot of things going on, and we're trying to work on that too. So I'm not trying to pick out one. I just want to know what you were doing all together so that we could say yes, with this and this, we could see what's happening, because it's kind of like this is one of the tools in the toolbox, but I would like to know what your other tools are.
Sure, and I think that's a great question. And to start with your question regarding data and where Florida stacked up compared to other states, I can tell you that back in the early 90s and pretty much throughout the 90s, Florida was consistently at the bottom of the state rankings for fourth and eighth grade reading and math. We were always in the bottom 10. Sometimes as low as third or fourth from the bottom, sometimes eighth or ninth from the bottom on those state rankings. I know the most recent release of fourth grade Florida NAEP scores, we were in the top 10. I think we were number 6, and we are performing at or above average for the rest of the subjects. So Florida has made substantial movement among state rankings from the bottom to the top after the implementation of school grading. So right around that 2003 administration, 2002-2003 administration, Florida did definitely show and demonstrate improvements in rankings, and we can provide you the data and ranking charts for all of those. Florida has not implemented any type of statewide mandatory professional development instruction or curriculum. Florida does maintain still quite a bit of local control. So the policies that are put in place are state-level policies, such as expectations for students reading at grade level in third grade, but not telling them specifically how that needs to be implemented in the classroom. There is district discretion to do that. So there was professional development offered from the state. There were curriculum and materials offered from the state, diagnostic screening assessments offered from the state, but not a mandate that all districts and schools use all of these materials. Likewise, for school grading, we began holding our schools accountable for ensuring students are proficient and making at least a year's worth of progress in a year's worth of time, but we did not tell them how they had to do that. Local districts know best how to serve their local students. We just have the same expectation for all students, no matter where they were in the state of Florida. The districts are responsible for ensuring they get the best instruction that they deserve. So
So the state-level policies are really outcome policies, not input policies. We're not telling districts specifically what to do or how to do it. We're holding them accountable for ensuring that students get a year's worth of knowledge and a year's worth of time, and that they meet our proficiency standards.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a number of questions. I kind of think we're sort of running down a rabbit trail about Florida. We're not trying to create the Florida school system in Alaska. This system is being used in Florida. That's good. And there's questions about it, but more interested in Alaska's system. A couple questions, if I may. First, do students actually get A through F grades in their report cards? My recollection is my daughter gets a needs improvement, achieving expectations, exceeds expectations, that kind of thing. So is A, B, C, D, F actually used in the Anchorage School District?
Through third grade, is my understanding, they get the N's, S's, and O's. Above that grade, starting fourth grade, it's A through F. And if anyone has any different information, like Harriet or Representative Drummond, let us know. But that's what my kids got.
Okay. So above fourth grade, they actually do get A's, yes. A, B, C, D, F, or A, B, C, F. Okay. Probably important to know, I know if we're just asking questions of the person in Florida.
Yeah.
Well, then I'll hold off, but the sponsor then. There are currently, I'm not an education expert, there are other assessments of school performance at the state and federal levels. Could you talk and tell us, give us a primer on those, what it currently exists in the terms of evaluating and grading schools? I see some reference in the fiscal notice to state and federal assessments. Mm-hmm.
I can certainly start. The Department of Education is here and willing to speak to this as well. But I can tell you right now, this is like the annual yearly progress report that we can get. And it's a little bit complicated, even for someone.
Is that the NCLB federal? You were just
saying that. The AYP, the annual yearly progress.
Right, that's the federal No Child Left Behind adequate yearly progress.
Exactly. So basically, it'll go over... It's a pretty complicated thing. It talks about the district as a whole, and then it breaks down all the different races. It talks about participation rates. It's a pretty complicated system. And then each school gets a report card. I pulled off our high school report card. And again, it goes into attendance rate, retention rate, transient rate, economically disadvantaged, how many volunteer hours there are, what the dropout rate is, who the school business partners are, and it'll just go over the reading proficiency, in 11th. It'll go through, the different grades. So they are collecting quite a bit of the data. And the neat thing is that this is, from my understanding of talking to the department, it could be synergistic because they're already collecting all the data. We're not adding any new assessments. We've already changed the bill, so there's no new assessments added. So they're already collecting the data. So this basically just adds one more layer, and it just puts a simple report card. I put that in your packets of what a report card would look like. Do you have one, Robert?
I think I've got that, yeah. Actually, I think I've got the sample of what
what a report card would look like.
Blue looks like it was from before. Is there... On that, the NCLB report, is there an overall rating, or is it mostly just tabular information? Is there any overall? Is there a grade on those?
No. On the AYP? Mm-hmm. No. There's no grade. So this just simplifies it. So when people are in a hurry and they're, just wanting, they only have a few minutes to look, it's just a quick glance, at the report card. I think I gave you guys a copy of what a report card would look like. It looks just like this.
Right. Okay, so that's the federal, with your indulgence, Madam Chair, so that's the federal assessment. Is there a state assessment? I saw some reference to the Anchorage School District doing their assessment, but the question stands, is there any statewide assessment?
Okay, the standard-based assessments, is Commissioner Hanley here?
And so, Commissioner, just to be real clear, I think the question is, what do we presently do as far as state assessments, as well as how they dovetail with our national reporting? So if you could speak to that, please.
For the record, my name is Mike Hanley. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. Currently, right now, we have our SBAs, our standards-based assessments, that is given annually in grades 3 through 10.
This week.
Yes, right now, and that is a function of our requirements, our federal requirements under the ESEA Act, No Child Left Behind. for federal compliance, federal accountability measures. So those schools, those measures give us the adequate yearly progress. The only measure that really comes out of there, although there is data that's disaggregated by school, you can break it down by subgroups, the main score is, did you meet adequate yearly progress or not? So this would be a separate system than the one we currently have in place. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. If I may, how does this current system we have, how would it dovetail with? Is it duplicative of? Is it redundant? Is it conflicting with? Is it complementary?
It would be, through the chair, there'd be different systems. They would measure slightly different things. We're in the midst of our waiver to change what that AYP model looks like. So we would have a model that currently what is in our waiver is a five-star system, and we would have a, instead of just meeting AYP or not meeting AYP, a school would be rated on a five-star system, with five being the highest. This would could be considered complementary. It's different. It's separate. Measures slightly different things.
So what would a parent go to one assessment system versus the other to try and find out? If we set this up in law, there'll be two different grading systems. A parent wants to know about their school, their child's school. They would go to the state system for what and to the system for what?
They would go to the state system to see where our federal compliance is based on our state assessments. And they would, both of them I anticipate would be on the school report card. They could go to the school report card and see each of those scores there. Currently, the AYP data is on there, and I think it's the intention of the sponsor that this data would be there as well. So they'd be able to see both those in the same place.
Representative Wilson.
Okay.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was, for Dr. Christie, if she's still on the line, I guess I'm trying to figure out, like Representative Ledoux, is how this, we're saying this is the cause. When No Child Left Behind and adequate yearly progress was implemented, couldn't we basically have this same kind of a chart, a little simpler, saying how many schools met or didn't meet AYP each year, and have the same kind of thing? And then we would say, well, the schools that improved were improved because of adequate yearly progress standards and schools meeting those. I guess I'm trying to figure out how we're saying all, you know, school improvement is from this grading system and not from the other elevated requirements, you know, nationwide that took place in these same years.
That's a very good question. To be clear, the school grading system doesn't improve student achievement. The school grading system highlights student performance in the school to demonstrate whether or not schools are doing what they need to meet the needs of the students. The A-S grading system has been a major catalyst for schools to change what they're doing in the school. Keep in mind, the department isn't going to tell schools how to provide instruction or what materials to use or what to do on a daily basis in the classroom. But those things change as a result of schools being held accountable and as grades such as an A, B, C, D, or an F being made publicly accountable and available to parents, other educators, other business and community leaders. The A through S system highlights and shines a bright light on what schools are doing successfully, what schools are not as successful, and really the stigma attached to being or earning a D or an F school grade is what changes practice at the school. I know Representative Reingold showed you a chart last week in a presentation that demonstrated just the increase in the A's and the B's and the decreases in the C's and the F's after just that first year of the system. Nothing changed within the system. The state didn't tell people how to do things any differently, but the grade associated with their school resulted in something changing on an instructional level within the school. So the system, the grading system A through F, doesn't change, but the transparency of the system, the availability of the information, the ease of access, the understanding of what an A, B, C, D, and F means is what actually changed the practice of what happens in that school.
Representative Seaton, follow up.
Thanks. And I guess from the chart that we have, you know, I just used the calculator here, and the A schools in 2011, 31% declined to a B. On the B schools, 46% of those declined to a C school. And C schools, we had 34% decline and 22% increase a letter score. So I guess I'm not following that. The letter score has actually produced those results, and that's this looking at 2012 compared to 2011 elementary school calculation. But one other question, the bill that we have is a rolling average of 2 years. Does your system have a two-year average? And if you had a two-year average, would that mean that the significance of the change would probably be less either in decline or improvement than is being shown in yours from 1 year to the next?
No, we do not use two-year averages, so I'm not sure what the exact impact would be. Part of the reason we do not use two-year averages is, one, it complicates the system and does not give a true picture of what's happening in the current year, especially if we've had instructional leadership change. We do not want to hold back a school that's making great progress because of a previous leader or have the impact of a previous year on the current year instruction. And again, I understand the calculations you've completed, and the school grade benchmark is something that increases from time to time in Florida. Florida believes that reform is never finished and success is never final. So as soon as we do have a large proportion of A and B schools, and we're approaching approximately 75% of our schools statewide earning an A or a B, that Florida raises the standard. As soon as we have that much success, it's time to move the bar a little bit higher. So specifically from 2011 to 2012, we did move that bar a little bit higher, and that is why we have so many more schools in decline, a letter grade from 2011 to 2012. If we, when we get to 2013 school grades, certain those numbers are going to be a little different because schools knew that these standards were being raised, they were changing their instructional practices, and we will have more A and B schools again this year than we did in the 2012 school year. And if you look at going back, I've already sent to Representative Reinbold and Robert the improvement of school letter grades from 2010 to 2011 prior to us increasing the standard for proficiency on our statewide assessment. And it shows a very different picture than what it does from 11 to 12. But when you're implementing an accountability system, especially one that's about 15 years old right now, you have to continue to raise the standards on it. Otherwise, it starts to become meaningless, and people are just kind of placated by the current standards and kind of settling for that mediocrity that's there. So it's continuously raising the bar to continue to improve student achievement, to continue to push us further and further up in the national rankings. The reason we rely on NAEP data, the National Assessment for Educational Progress, is because those tests aren't changing and those standards don't change, and it's the longest running longitudinal nationally compared data set that we have, and based on those rankings, our student achievement is improving year after year. And so we do need to keep pushing and raising the bar so we get further and further up those rankings. But if you look at it from 1992 to present, we are substantially better off than we were 20 years ago.
Thank you. And I just have a question for the bill sponsor. So what I'm hearing, and this is our third time hearing this, what I'm basically hearing is we have a five-star or a star program that were already grading the schools. It's somewhat, I won't say hidden, but a little difficult for the layperson to find. And what you're asking is that we change from STARS to A through F, which many of us raised in public school understand that, versus the STAR system, and that you're asking it to be prominently displayed so that parents recognize where their standing is. And what I think I'm hearing from Dr. Christie is just that prominence has helped parents and teachers move forward, or at least get in energized to get a little bit higher up on the scale. Is that essentially what this bill does?
Yes, yes. And basically, what we believe is it's synergistic because we're collecting all the same data. It's just putting it in a little bit different form, a little bit crisper, a little bit clearer data. And it's based on achievement, 50% on achievement, and 25% on individual learning gains in reading, writing, and math, and then 25% of the lowest 25 percentile. So it basically just, it strips out all the accessories, and it just focuses on the core of achievement and learning gains, and it gives a letter grade to help stimulate. And if you look back on the chart that we gave you, it's a dramatic improvement over time with the A through A and B schools. And I would like to notice another chart that I've given you guys, this chart, that Alaska, according to the NEA rankings and estimates, that Alaska spends the highest. And unfortunately, according to the 2011 Department of Education NEP scores, we're on the bottom. And if you look at Florida, Florida spent, they're sixth from the bottom of spending. So they were only spending about $1,500 per student, yet they were sixth ranking overall with their NAEP scores in reading. So they were sixth in the nation, and that was in 2011. So they've definitely, Florida's come a long way. They've had tremendous success. They've implemented more than just the grading system, but the grading system was definitely part of this comprehensive system of reform for the schools. And Alaska, we need to do better. We need to have a jump start. And that's what we're very, very excited about this bill, to help highlight where we are and then have a catalyst for change right now.
Madam Chair, excuse me, if I might add just one thing. The five.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
I'm sorry. Yes, Robert Pearson, Staff Representative Reinbold. To clarify one point, the STAR system is in the No Child Left Behind waiver application and is not in place yet. The major difference in the criteria for grading is the 1 to 5 star system has 70% achievement and learning gains, 25% attendance, and 5% participation as the criteria to get your 1 to 5 stars. House Bill 151, the major difference is this bill has 100% achievement and learning gains. 50% achievement, 50% learning gains. So I think Representative Reinbold strongly feels that that is the major difference as well between the A through F system and the STAR system.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux, do you still have a question? Thank you. Please, go ahead.
So I'm just wondering, under both the STAR system and this grading system, if a school starts out really low and then it makes gains, it could actually end up with a higher grade than a school which didn't start out so low but made lesser gains. And I mean, I guess when I think about grades, I think about, you know, what is, just period, what is. And I guess if I were a parent and were looking at a school, I'd want to know, you know, what it's, I guess I'd want that grading system to be based, I think, more on actual performance, kind of a fish or cut bait thing, than how much it had improved.
I'm going to speak to that, and then I'm going to have Dr. Christie speak to that, and that's exactly the reason why we need this bill. This bill cuts out all the sitting in the chair, you know, just attendance, basically, you know, like he was saying, participation. This goes down strictly to achievement. 50% of this is based on reading, writing, math, and existing science testing. So that's a big core of this. So this is all existing testing that we already do. So it's a combined student achievement data. And then it goes on to individual gains. And like we said before, it's helping schools progress. And it's really, really important to bring those schools in to show progress. Don't want to keep them. We want to make sure we're motivating them as they bring up their students. And that's the reason why we had the progress in there. And gains. Dr. Christie, do you have anything to add to that?
I do, and that's a really good point, because our ultimate goal is to have all students proficient. But one of the things we want to be sure that our mobility system also captures is if students enter a school already proficient, are teachers still doing enough to make sure that they're maintaining a year's worth of knowledge and a year's worth of time so those students, for some reason, aren't slipping or regressing? Even though they might still be proficient, we want them to continue to move forward to reach those advanced levels of proficiency. Likewise, we also want to know if a school does have a lot of underperforming students when they enter the school year, how well are teachers doing to ensure that those students are making a year's worth of progress and a year's worth of time, even though they might not actually reach that proficient mark. So we're looking at it from both sides, that our high-performing schools, we want to ensure that they remain high-performing, and we can help do that by making sure that those students are making learning gains year after year. And likewise, we also want to level those playing fields for those schools who might receive a lot of students who are not quite at that proficient level, but they are making a lot of progress with those students who are really, really far behind, and acknowledge that and reward that because they are making a big difference in that student's performance.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for the sponsor about you talked about the basis of the assessments. My question is, if grades are significantly predicated on gains, doesn't that mean that schools and students can eventually top out? Basically, there's not much more headroom for advancement. It sounds like in Florida they have moved the goalposts, so there's always more headroom to continue to achieve higher. But if 25% is based on the growth in the lowest 25 quartile of schools, and 25% is based on learning gains, isn't there a certain point at which there's not that much more gain? You could be outstanding and have just a tiny fraction of improvement available to you, but not achieving it. So,
through the chair, Representative Sadler, if I might address that. Robert Pearson, staff Representative Reinbold. All schools are a mix of students, of various achievement levels, and some obviously have a lot more students starting out at a higher achievement level. I think the point of this grading system, of these criteria for grading, is that it's fair to all schools. There are a few schools in Alaska who have mostly high achieving students to start with. And even they, if they make more than a year's worth of progress, no matter where they start from, that's additional headroom to improve the grade. And so no matter where you start, whether you're several grades above your age to start with, if you make more progress during the year, again, that adds to your school's grade and helps keep it up. So it applies to all students, the learning gains, high or low achievers. The rewarding of extra points, so to speak, for the lowest 25% is something that, all states, and including our state, it's a very big deal to raise those students up, and it's, a very important component of the education system. So that additional reward is for something that we, I believe, all feel is something that needs extra attention by the schools and the teachers as well.
And I could add probably just a little bit more explanation, but in the way you define learning gains, you'll also be able to reward those highest performing students.
So the way Florida defines a year's worth of progress and a year's worth of time, one of the definitions is if the student is performing at the advanced level, are they still performing at the advanced level in the following year on the next higher grade level test? So we do not reward performance for learning gains if students drop in achievement level. So if they were at advanced and went down to proficient, we would not consider that a learning gain, but they would count it as proficient in the system. We only include students that maintain their proficiency level or maintain an advanced level of proficiency as making a learning gain. So those students at the very top, all they need to do is maintain their achievement level, not necessarily increase an achievement level.
I have to say, echoing what my colleague to the left here said, an ABC grade implies to me a reflection of achievement. It doesn't imply any accelerant or decelerant. You're getting better at a faster rate, or you're getting better. There is advantages and disadvantages to a system. It is simple and comprehensible. On the same token, it's simple. It doesn't. And the fact that you're putting in change in achievement level, I think, complicates a little bit. I'm not comfortable with that part yet. If I could, another topic.
And if we will, I just want to make a comment that I apologize for not introducing Senator Dyson, having sitting in the audience for the last hour, and he does have a bill to present. So we'll take a couple more questions. I do have a full house here, so I want to take advantage of those who had signed up for public testimony, since it looks like a lot of them have flown in. So if we do end up holding this bill, we could also hold our questions and acknowledge those in the audience. So Representative Sadler, very quickly.
Tell me about the Elastic Strategic Educator.
Okay.
Is there more funding associated with it? Is there incentives for someone to move from one school to a school that needs improvement?
We can't get involved in the money. Those contracts with the teachers are done outside of our realm. So we wanted to give the Department of Education power to reward and recognize teachers. So they'll basically pick them, identify them, and the teacher has to be willing to go to one of the schools that are a D or an F and be willing to try to help bring that school up. So the department can speak further to this, but this was just a way that we could, without adding any fiscal note at all to the bill, to be able to recognize outstanding teachers that were willing to go and help a school that wasn't doing as well as what they were hoping to be doing.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure whether the bill sponsor or Christy needs to answer this, but is there a way with this grading system that you can you want to see individual student progress, but you also and maybe with our No Child Left Behind we can check to see is there also a way to, and I think maybe there is with what we're currently doing, to check teacher which teachers might be needing some extra help or some extra in-service or something like that, so that if that's not happening, that we can look to see, yes, we want to help. Maybe there's five teachers in a school system that have are in a school that we can pinpoint so that we can help them do a better job, so that we're not only checking student progress, but we're also checking to see if our teachers need extra help.
Dr. Christie, do you want to go ahead and take that? And then if not, we can bring the Department of Education up.
Sure. The school grade does not specifically provide data on individual teachers. However, the principal will give information about the individual student performance within the school and the information with the school grade accountability system. And likely, or has been the case in other states, we'll look to see where the students are making learning gains and not making learning gains, and where students tend to be proficient and where they're not proficient, and target and focus those instructional or PD interventions with teachers that have a majority of the students that are not making the learning gains.
So the state did not report out teacher-level information, but that's been easily available to the principal through this accountability system.
Thank you.
We'll ask the bill sponsor, do you have anybody, any other invited testimony before we move to public testimony?
I believe we can move to public testimony at this time.
Okay, here we go. Let's go to OffNet, and I show Bob Griffin. Are you online?
Well, can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you loud and clear. Be sure to introduce yourself and who you may be with for the record.
Okay, I'm Bob Griffin. I'm an education research fellow for the Alaska Policy Forum and a contributing member to Students First and American Federation for Children. I'm calling in support of House Bill 151. Over the last several years, I've attended dozens of meetings and education seminars and summits across the U.S.
Can you slow down?
Is one of the most effective
Hey, Bob?
Inexpensive.
Bob?
Yes.
Can you slow down a little bit? And we have a bad connection as well, so slow down, and maybe we can hear you better.
Okay. Over the last several years, I've attended dozens of meetings and education seminars across the U.S., and this is, I view this reform as one of the most effective and inexpensive reforms that I've encountered in my travels. Alaska has a rare combination of very high expense for K-12 education and low performance. And all indications are that Alaska is in desperate need of some significant cultural change along the lines of the Parental Information Act. Although Alaska's schools do some very good things, we don't stack up very well in our fundamentals. In the 2011 NAEP, compared to Florida, despite Florida's slight decline in their NAEP scores, they were 44th in per capita spending in K-12 education, and they were 6th in the nation in upper and middle income reading, and 4th in the nation in low income reading. Alaska was 1st in per capita spending, and 4th, and 50th in reading for our low income and our upper middle income students, despite spending nearly double per student what the state of Florida spends. One of the most important aspects of the Parental Information Act is a rating system that is different from our current system that allows us to reward chronically low-performing schools for showing improvement. The current school report card doesn't show that. Of course, as Representative Ryan Bolton and others have pointed out, 50% of the grade is calculated on improvement gains. And this is, I think, an important aspect for chronically low-performing schools to give them something to look forward to. One of the best examples that I can point to is the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School in Anchorage. Started out in 2007 as the lowest-performing school in the Anchorage School District, but has been the most rapidly improving school in the school district, and is, in fact, among the highest-performing schools in the state for populations that have 100% of the kids qualifying for free or reduced lunch. Some of the people have been troubled with the strong emotions that are tied to letter grades, especially in the small villages and chronically low-performing schools, and that they wouldn't have any alternative to attend a different program. The problem with this argument is that they already lack the lack of choice already exists in those communities, and the ability to harness those strong emotions towards school grades as a positive catalyst for cultural change is exactly what this legislation is intended. Public awareness of school performance will spur innovation and change. Communities may choose to augment or even replace their school, their current school models with higher performing proven models. Some of the obvious examples are the Alaska Native Cultural Charter Model or the American Indian Public Charter Model. In those cases, communities would actually have a choice where none exists at this time. As many of the, I'll skip ahead to a point too that many feel that House Bill 151 might be punitive. I would argue that the Parental Education Information Act is no more punitive than any other rating service like Consumer Reports or Angie's List or Erden Spoons. All those organizations are able to create an easy-to-understand rating system to communicate consumer information on complex topics. The great improvement of this system over those types of systems is that it's basically purely on objective data. To speak to the strategic educator portion, that was something that came out of the mayor's education summit in Anchorage, that former superintendent Peter Garman from the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system used that, and to great advantage in as the simple moniker of being able to call themselves strategic educators was like much like the military awarding a medal to someone. It was very highly sought after, and it actually attracted the high-performing, high-quality teachers that tend to the low-performing schools. And quickly in closing, I'm confident that our kids are just as smart, our parents are just as loving, and our teachers are just as dedicated, and the vast majority of the states who significantly outperform us in achievement. I think what Alaska needs is a cultural change to how we approach K-12 education statewide, and I think the Parental Education Information Act is a very good common sense start to that end.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. And if you do have notes, if you could send them to my office for distribution, I'd appreciate it. Next, we'll go to folks in the audience. And the first one I have, I'm going to try, LaDarren Drews. Thank you. And please introduce yourself and who you may be with for the audience. Or for the record, I apologize.
That's fine. Good morning. LaDon Drews. It's a pleasure to be here. You often hear me testifying from the LIO in Kenai. Hi. Good morning. I'm representing the Kenai Peninsula Education Association and NEA Alaska. I'm here today to speak against House Bill 151. I agree with the bill's sponsor this morning when she said there are pockets of greatness, and as a whole, though, we need to do better. I would agree with that. We are educators. That's what we do. We continue to learn and strive to do better. As I mentioned on Friday in my testimony, I'm one of 9 members selected by Commissioner Hanley to be part of the advisory teacher evaluation group that will be advising the department on the new teacher evaluation regulations. And a component of that, as you well know, is part of student learning data. It was mentioned this morning that this program would be simple, comprehensive grading system. Simple. To understand, I don't believe so, as the last hour has shown. Simple to extract a letter grade, perhaps. However, I would argue that education is not simple. Educating students is a complex art. And what about the other subject areas that we teach in our schools beyond the ones that this grading system would address? It was mentioned this morning that this would motivate improvement. Among whom and for what purpose? It was also mentioned we should involve parents more. I absolutely agree, and the way to do that is to invite them into our schools, to encourage them to be part of our communities and our school buildings. I would suggest back on motivating improvement that education is not a competition. We are not a business model because we do not get to control the product that comes through our doors. If you have not read the Blueberry story, I would encourage you to Google and read that. We are not a bracket for March Madness. We do not compete, we educate. Representative Olson, a co-sponsor of this bill, was in town on Saturday. And I gave the example that we used to live in Kotzebue in the 80s. Kotzebue High School, let's say, by whatever matrix and formula used here, becomes a D or an F school. To what purpose and what end? What are the choices for students in Kotzebue to attend another high school? There are no other high schools in the area. I taught English literature. Every year we read Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter. The word stigma came up in the testimony this morning. I believe this would provide a stigma to our schools and not a positive motivation. My final question is, what is this bill truly trying to solve for? And then my response would be, please identify the problem or problems trying to be addressed here and let us, as the educators, help you address those problems. We care deeply about the children in the state and want our very best to be educating them. And we will work with you to identify and solve those problems. Thank you for the opportunity today.
And thank you for the face that we can now connect over the phone.
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Sadler.
Hey, question for Ms. Drews. Could you let me know, in your opinion, would teachers in your organization be attracted to serve at an underperforming school with the incentive of being designated an Alaska Strategic Educator?
I'm sorry, Strategic Educator?
Alaska Strategic Educator. The bill envisions teachers getting that designation as an encouragement to go teach at an underperforming school. So my question to you is, would that be an incentive?
Through the chair, I'm not sure I know exactly what that term would mean, strategic educator. I'm not sure what all would be involved in that. Perhaps I haven't read the bill carefully enough to know exactly what that would mean. I think teachers are drawn to Alaska for a variety of reasons. I think some teachers actually are drawn to rural communities for the fact that they are rural communities. Oftentimes, though, we have a very difficult time retaining teachers in our rural communities because of some of the issues beyond education that is often prevalent in those communities. But I'm not familiar with that term, nor do I understand the meaning of it, so I could not answer that question. I'm sorry.
Thank you. And next we'll go to Tim Parker, and if you'll introduce. You know, we have another bill to hear, so Mr. Parker, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Tim Parker. I am a teacher at Lathrop High School in Fairbanks, and I've been a teacher in Fairbanks for 15 years. I was the 2007 BP Teacher of the Year for Fairbanks, and I think I'm an expert on motivating and improving student performance. And unfortunately, I have to agree. Well, not unfortunately, I agree, but I definitely agree with my friend here, LaDon, on the idea of competition. And we're not about creating winners and losers at schools. Shaming is not the way to approach how we're going to improve schools. We know that most of the schools that tend to rank lower in these types of rankings are done are tied to poverty and transiency issues. I mean, that's the known fact. And I wish we could solve those issues by simply putting a letter grade on schools, but I don't think we can. I mean, if shaming did work, I mean, I guess to a certain degree, wouldn't it be great if shaming worked? As a teacher and an expert in a classroom, I can tell you that I would never use shaming as a way to make something happen. I was taught early on in my teacher training that that's the wrong thing to do, to put somebody in front of the class and say, this is the student who got the lowest grade. We never do that. That's not the way that you make things happen. You make something happen with students by actually talking to them, providing the extra support that they need. Representative Ledoux said that you can't show that this bill would improve student performance. That's exactly right. This bill doesn't tie to improving student performance, and so that's one other reason that we have trouble supporting this. We can't support this. Representative Wilson addressed the whole idea of, wouldn't it be great if we had more teacher in-service or directed in-services to helping teachers, or extra time to work with students at different time periods. Those are great ideas, and those are ones that are definitely supported by teachers around the state. We definitely believe in those as being actual solutions to improving student performance, where we don't see this bill, making some of those things happening. The key is to provide adequate support for schools with the actual services to students who are struggling in different areas, because there are plenty that are struggling. As much as we'd like to be in favor of bills, and you often hear us testify against bills down here, and that's not our purpose. We would love to be in favor of many things, and we are in favor of some positive education changes. And NEA Alaska has passed and supports an idea called NEA Alaska's Six Principles, and I encourage all of you to take a look at that and look at some positive ways that things that teachers around the state and education support professionals around the state can say yes to, things that we can support, things that we can get behind. One of them is Representative Wilson's idea of providing directed professional development that helps teachers get the expertise they need. We're very supportive of the idea of professional learning communities. We're also supportive of the idea of exploring peer review as a concept. We think that holds a lot of promise, but yet there's no bill on peer review that's before us today. Extending time to the school year, we're willing to talk about that. Creating a good evaluation system. The commissioner was here just a moment ago. We're supportive of the ideas of creating a valued evaluation system. We think that could show improvement in student performance. Family school partnering, which LaDon mentioned, is also something we're in favor of, and delivering a rich and varied curriculum. Those are all really positive ideas that could improve student performance in schools. And I hope that we will take a look at some of those ideas in bills that are coming forward in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker, and you indicated a lot of ideas. If you could make sure that you get those ideas to my office, I'd like to distribute them if you have them on paper, or if you will put them on paper. That being said, could we bring up Jacob Berg? And since we are limited for time, we'll ask you to a couple minutes, and we do have another bill to hear.
My name is Jacob Barra. The record, I am a teacher at Eagle River High School. I teach at the high school that Representative Reinbold represents. And I'm also a member of the Anchorage Education Association and the National Education Association in Alaska. And I'm here today. I just learned about this bill actually a couple days ago, and I'm here because I'm concerned about HB 151. I'm concerned that it stigmatizes the school rather than provides ideas for us to improve. In researching this bill, I think the intentions are good and well-meaning. I think it's important for us to recognize the things that we're doing well and the things that we can improve on. But the idea that it provides a catalyst for parents to improve a school, I think this bill is working in the wrong direction. Representative Reinbold kind of stole my thunder as far as sort of pointing out the school report card that the Anchorage School District already puts out. She said she pulled the one from Eagle River High School, and I have that as well. And if you want, I can provide copies to the board as well. I think that rather than just a simple letter grade that would stigmatize a school as an A school, a B school, a C school, D or an F, I think education and assessment is a lot more complex. And this report, if you read through it, really paints a more complete picture as far as how we're performing as a high school. You know, and as far as parents coming in and making an informed choice, rather than just saying this is a C school, which actually the Alaska Policy Forum, Mr. Griffin, the gentleman who talked before, Eagle River High School is rated a C school, a C minus school. But if you look at, you know, our school report card, it gives a more complete picture of areas that we do well in and areas that we can improve on. For example, if you look at the SBAs, rather than just a simple letter grade, it shows that actually 9th grade to 10th grade, reading, writing, and math for years 2010, 2011 have increased. It talks about, on the first page, our school goals for as far as what areas that we do need to improve in and what we're doing to try to make that happen. It talks about parent involvement and our strategies as a school. And it points to successes as well, which I think is really important. And so in researching this bill as well, one thing I was kind of concerned about, and I think the intentions of the sponsor, I think the intentions of the Alaska Policy Forum and other groups that are in favor of this are very well-meaning, and I really appreciate that. I support accountability. I support rigor. I support providing parents information about their child's school. And I support them being able to make an informed decision. But with the report card that the Alaska Policy Forum was putting out, my concern is that they weren't providing ways that that school can improve. For example, Mountain View Elementary, a school I taught at, they were out in front of the school handing out letters to parents saying, this is a failing school. And you have the opportunity to go to two different schools in the Anchorage School District can provide that transportation. And so I'm all for parents making a more informed decision, but how is that helping the school improve? How is that a catalyst for that school to change for the better? Rather, that's stigmatizing that school, Mountain View Elementary, by saying, don't go here. And ASD has to provide you transportation to go somewhere else. As a teacher that works in Anchorage School District, I moved from Mountain View Elementary to Eagle River High School. And if I was given the opportunity, you know, to go to a failing school as a teacher expert, or I can't remember what the term was, I think through the chair, Representative Sadler asked that question, would I have the motivation to do that? Well, if the school is labeled and stigmatized as a failing school, why would I do that? If the school isn't going to get the resources and the time and the effort and the attention it needs, and rather just be said it's a failing school, why would I want to go there? In part, I moved from Mountain View Elementary to Eagle River High School because as an art teacher, I was split between two schools. I had to teach at Mountain View and Tyson. And when I got the job at Eagle River High School, I actually went to the principal at Mountain View Elementary and I said, listen, I really support this school. This is one of the most inspiring staff I've ever been a part of. The first grade teacher at that school would go to Costco on the weekend and buy food so that her kids could have a snack because she couldn't stand the sound of their kids' stomachs growling before they had to do their reading assignments. It was a great first place for me to work at as far as being an educator because it really demonstrated to me what it actually takes to get students to learn. But now that's a failing school. And so rather than this kind of stigmatizing grade in this sort of program, I believe that we should look closer at the data, look closer at this sort of report card, and talk to the educators at the school. and ask them what their ideas are for improvement. Mr. Parker, who spoke before, talked about the leading the profession, the six sort of guiding principles. I have copies here that I can actually get to the board right now. I was a part of that committee.
Excuse me, but we have yeah. Another bill here. So
no worries. I won't go any farther. But if you want to take this, and if the board wants copies of the school report card for Eagle River High School
so
I can provide that.
You bet.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. And we do have somebody from OffNet, Mr. Kevin Shipley.
Yes, Kevin Shipley.
Please go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and who you might be with. And do remember, we just have a couple minutes.
Sure. I'm Kevin Shipley, superintendent of schools in Cave City School District. Calling on House Bill 151, I've listened to the testimony, and let me first say I agree with Senator Reinhold that in Alaska we need to make improvements in the educational system that improves the performance for all our students. I also have no doubt that those on this committee value education for our children, but let me also say that I don't have an issue necessarily with the A through F grading system in particular. I do have concerns, however, with the bill in its current state. I'm new to Alaska system and process. I hesitate to give my testimony on the Alaska system of education. But having been a turnaround specialist for the last 12 years in Texas, on which the Florida model is based, I do feel that I understand the reform model of education and how it affects the changes you've implemented here in Alaska. Let me first say that while challenges may be similar, there are differences between Alaska, Texas, and Florida, and I can assure you the solutions may be similar, but they are not the same. In fact, in Florida, they had a punishment reward system or a voucher program for failing schools closely tied to this bill, and I have a report from the Manhattan Project on February 2001 that actually shows that it was successful. I'll be happy to provide that to you. They also passed a standard, the A3F has been manipulated as the bar has been raised. So as they raise the bar, the passing standard may drop in order for enough schools to create and fall into that A, B, C, D, and F category. While Florida's scores for minority students have raised, they have not related to college readiness on the ACT or SAT. And I just had some questions on this bill. Again, I'm not total opposition of the bill, it's just I have concerns trying to implement a system from another state into Alaska. It creates a new testing requirement that will cost over $2 million per year in perpetuity in science, according to the fiscal notes. And we're adding science to our grading system, which has not been done. Currently, we only grade on math and reading. So we'll be adding for accountability science, and I don't know that we have prepared our schools, our teachers, or anyone else for this. And I have several other things, but in relation to time, I think the main thing I have to ask are what are the unintended consequences of this bill, the science testing being the one I see, and being from a turnaround school, I'm also concerned how this will stigmatize and rate the low-income schools and low-income students and try to encourage them to be better.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Shipley. You may want to note that the science section has been taken out, and I would recommend that the bill sponsor contact you, and maybe you two can go through that. That being said, is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? We'll close public testimony, and we'll move on to hear Senate Bill 41. I'd like to call the bill sponsor and their staff forward to speak to the bill.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to the committee for hearing this bill. I'm Senator Dyson from Eagle River. The sponsor of this bill and my staff, Joshua Banks, who will explain it. Basically, what we're doing here is fixing an omission in last year's bill and an unintended mistake in it. In last year's bill. Joshua will explain the bill to you.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joshua Banks, staff Senator Dyson. And with the rise of popularity with alternative education programs, many school districts have accepted these students, whether homeschool or in correspondence schools, as their own kids in their own district. And as you'll see, that the sponsor statements said House Bill 158 a few years ago allowed homeschool students to enroll and participate in public schools part-time, and there were some issues with letting kids play with sports with Chugach High School. There was an issue with one homeschooler not being allowed to play sports, play on the football team, and there were some issues with that. And so Representative Stoltz and Senator Meyer last year created Senate Bill 119, which would allow students that are involved with a alternative education program to play or to participate in interscholastic activities. Unintentionally, the Senate Bill 119 left out private schools and religious schools. It specifically stated public schools only. And so when there were some homeschool students wanting to participate at a few private schools, they weren't allowed to because the law specifically said public schools. So what Senate Bill 41 will do is allow students to participate in private schools. The ASAA, Alaska School Activities Association, was very cooperative and very helpful in creating Senate Bill 119 and also Senate Bill 41, and they've been they've helped us. They've been in support and worked with our office to help create this bill. And so we're very grateful to the board of ASA and the executive director, who I believe is online to answer questions and give testimony. There are multiple schools that we've contacted that have been in support, and I believe there are three schools that have given letters of support. The idea of this bill is that it's not requiring private schools to take every homeschool student that comes to their door and say, I want to play on the basketball team. This bill doesn't require them to take them. If it's the same as what Senate Bill 119 did last year. It didn't require, say, Diamond High School or South or whatever high school to say, if a homeschool kid wants to play on the football team, they don't have to. If they have 20 people trying out for the quarterback position, say, a homeschool kid, they've got enough people. And so this bill doesn't require a private school to take a homeschool student on their sports teams. This bill just makes it so that alternative education students aren't systematically rejected from participating in activities, and makes it the law cannot be a barrier to disallow alternative education students from participating in interscholastic activities.
Yeah, I'm wary of your time situation. One of the things that came up when we got from ASA was that the bill that was passed last year said all the materials being used by an alternative had to be done entirely within the state. Well, ASA, the student activities group, said they were in no position to be able to do that. And of course, as all you know, all of the public school curriculum and books, very few of those are created within the state. So this bill takes out that word entirely. And when you get to it, Madam Chair, I would appreciate if you'd adopt as the working version the /U, which is the sponsored substitute that fixed the word entirely in the bill.
And we've held off questions because our group usually has a lot of questions. We at least wanted you to get through the sponsor statement. With that in mind, Representative Ledoux.
I may not understand the system of interscholastic sports, but with that said, why do we need a law letting the private schools take whoever they want on their athletic team? Is this because I just don't understand something here?
Well, excellent question. ASA sets the policy for all the schools who participate in a sports league. So if a private schools, many of them participate in in athletics along with the public schools, and which is everybody kind of wins in that one. And so with last year's bill, homeschool students could, with a public school's agreement, participate in athletics, and then therefore be able to participate in the interscholastic thing. So a private school can certainly take a homeschool kid in to play, but then they're excluded from the league that they were playing in. So that's the issue.
Follow up?
Let's make sure that we get everything on the table. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 4, version U, before us for discussion.
And I have to, with no objection, we will. Thank you. Follow up, Representative Ledoux. There we go.
Thank you. So ASA needs this bill. ASA can't simply do this by itself?
Correct. They've been very good to work with, but they're bound by what our law says. And so until last year, a homeschool approved homeschool curriculum child could not play for a public school. Now, with this bill passing, a homeschool student can play for a private school and not disqualify that school from participating in the league.
Thank you.
And at some point, I do want to remind you that we do have ASA online to speak to that. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want, for everyone's understanding, having worked on the SB 119 last year, that high school athletics is not the same thing only as high school activities. Interscholastic activities includes not only sports, but also band, competitive cheerleading, chess club, you know, anything. So that's one thing. And second, my understanding is that Senate Bill 119 did not, it is not optional for a public school under that bill to accept someone. If a student is eligible, they're eligible. It's not, there's no final checkoff from the school to say yay or nay. And I wanted to ask that of ASAA when they're on the line.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, for both last year's bill, Senate Bill 119, and this bill, the schools do have the final say on whether the homeschools will accept the students to play sports. If you look at, and I, if Madam Chair, if you would like, I can go through the sectional and think maybe some of the questions could be answered, particularly that question.
Senator Dyson.
When we did 158 back in 97, that was, the school didn't have choice. They did have to take a part-time student. But on the athletics and activities, both the 119 and this one are permissive. The schools can accept or reject the applicant at their choice.
Representative Ledoux.
Is that just like accepting or... Not everybody gets to play high school football. You have to be pretty decent to do it. So, I mean, is that just like for the private schools, it would be just like that?
Yes, ma'am. Through the chair, yes, ma'am.
Representative Reinbold.
Senator Dyson, I have a question for you. You know the situation that happened with Chugiak. Can you enlighten us? I'm not sure that everybody on here understands what happened there. And does that have anything to do with helping move this bill and the defining the need for this bill?
Well, the situation at Chugiak brought to light a problem. A student had applied. The school had, they jumped through all the hoops, and the school had approved their participation. But indeed, I think it was a ruling of ASA that it didn't come up to their standards of what was in place based on state law. So the student was declared ineligible, and the football team lost all of their season. They were disqualified, and their wins and losses didn't. So last year's bill 119 solved that problem. And this one is not solving a problem. It is just extending to private schools. And last year's sponsors have told me that they didn't intend to exclude the private schools. It was just an omission.
Any other questions? Representative Wilson.
I guess, thank you, Madam Chairman. So you just made a statement that you said that they lost all their games just because of one student?
Yes, ma'am.
So had that student been playing with that team before?
That student, perhaps the school isn't Representative Sadler's now, but that school wanted the kid to play, the kid wanted to play, and they had gone through what they thought were all the qualifications and everything and gotten approval. And then, but you're exactly right. And I'm very proud of that high school and their team because there was no anger or resentment directed towards the student at all, which I thought was a class act.
Follow up, please. So I'm still confused. Had this student played with the team before?
Not to my knowledge, through the chair.
Okay, so was he recruited to come play because he was good?
Representative Sadler, I think
education
this
committee, had you raise my hand?
Yes.
Thank you. Through the chair, maybe perhaps I can answer. The student was, I think, was a kicker. He had played through the season. Three games were actually disqualified. He had played. Senator Dyson is correct. He had disclosed his situation as a homeschooler. The person responsible at the school had given their approval, so everyone thought that he was good to go. Played in the games. When it got to the end of the season, someone dropped a dime and said that there were some questions. They looked into it. There was a different interpretation of the rules, and the three victories in which that student had played, the team was forced to forfeit, changing the standings, et cetera, et cetera. And I also will credit the school and the team and the kids for doing a great job and being grown-ups about it.
Okay. I still doesn't answer my question.
Yes, he played the team.
So he had played, okay, but was he recruited? I mean, I guess what I'm saying is this, if we have a losing team and we know it, can we recruit somebody else from another, somewhere else that's good so that we can win, so our team can win?
Madam Chair, can I answer that?
Please go ahead. Introduce yourself.
For the record, Joshua Banks. And I think Gary Matthews could answer this even better than I can, but I know that they have bylaws against recruiting and strict penalties for if that was the instance in this two-year high school's kicker, they would have not only lost their season but been fined some pretty hefty fines as well. So there are rules against. So if this bill passed, if a private school couldn't go and recruit just because they're basketball team isn't as good as they'd like to be.
So we probably shouldn't say that they lost all their games just because of that student. I mean, we should say, you know, the student wanted to play, and we want him to play if he wants to play, and he can't play because he's in another school, and he wants to play, so we're going to let him play. That's what this bill now will do. It'll just allow him to play in the school where he wants to play. Okay.
You know, I can hear the disconnect, and really what it is about a homeschool student that has no school to play at. So, you know, if he's an only child and is in homeschool at home, he's looking for a school to go play football. And so he happened in this case to find a public school that he played football in, and he was disqualified in those games, and it's what I'm hearing, that not only last year's bill corrected this for this kid, but it also allows, again, a homeschool kid to be able to choose a private school if the private school allows him to play within their schools. From an OSA standpoint, it allows the private schools to also pick up our homeschool students. It's the and you know, this perfect segue. Let's go to Gary Matthews. Gary, are you there?
I am, Madam.
And could you briefly explain what AWSAW is? I'm sorry, I know that what the acronym means, but if you go a bit farther for those, so that we could kind of set the stage for, and then could you speak to this particular bill? Go ahead, Gary, please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, I'm Gary Matthews, Executive Director of Alaska School Activities Association, a 45-year educator in Alaska. Alaska School Activities Association is the statewide governing body for interscholastic activities, which includes athletics, fine arts, academic activities in all the 200-plus member high schools in Alaska. And to be a member, a school has to agree to follow a common set of rules so that we have a level playing field. And every school district in the state, and most every high school in the state, is a member. There are a few small private schools which are not members of Alaska School Activities Association. But nearly, we have about 10 private school members and about 190 public school members. I listened to the testimony, and there are many questions that were asked that I can probably provide clarity to. I do agree that Senate Bill 119 last year solved most of the questions that were brought up with the Chugiak case, and that this bill we call more of a tweaking than anything else. Because Senate Bill 119 specifically said public schools, ASWA did not think we had the authority to extend it to our other members, which were private schools. It was discussed at our board meetings and in other regional meetings we had, but we didn't think we had the authority to do that, so we limited our bylaw amendments to only the public school sector. We have already embraced the Senate Bill 41's ideas, and in fact, we've already sent out proposed amendments, anticipating that this will pass. Even if it doesn't pass, I think our board will probably open this to private and religious schools anyway, because we already have those schools as members, and they have been left out of the mix on Senate Bill 119. We do thank Senator Dyson for the clarification, and he's in a home school which is located entirely in the state of Alaska. We all know that with the way we educate students today, that we would be excluding nearly every homeschool student in the state, and many students in public schools too. So we think that's a great fix, and we're standing by to make that work in Alaska. It goes into effect July 1st. We spent the last school year amending the bylaws with committees and hearings and so forth to implement the aspects of Senate Bill 41, Senate Bill 119, and now the new Senate Bill 41. We did discuss Senate Bill 41 with our board in February. The schools across the state now are aware of the amendment, and we're willing and ready to stand by and make this thing work starting July 1.
Representative Ledoux.
I think I heard you say that even if this thing doesn't pass, you're going to, do your amendments to allow private school or homeschooled kids to participate in private schools. So I guess my question is this against the law now? I mean, if you can do it without this bill, then why don't you just do it? And why didn't you do it?
Representative, through the chair, we didn't do it because of the wording in the Senate Bill 119, which said public schools. It wasn't clear that the state could mandate this for private and religious schools. It's more of a constitutional question, and that's way beyond our scope. If we did it without Senate Bill 41, it would probably be a little bit different, because there are two things. Senate Bill 41 give private schools the opportunity to accept these students as eligible students. My understanding of Senate Bill 119 is that is not an option for public schools. If the student lives within the school's attendance area, then the student has the opportunity to establish that school as the school of eligibility, as long as the student meets the eligibility standards. We have not considered that to be an option for the schools. Now, whether the student makes the team or gets placed in a band or something is a whole different situation. No kid is guaranteed a spot on a team. Senate Bill 40, 119 according to our understanding, is that it would guarantee that the student could accept a school near where he or she lives, or select that school as the school of eligibility, not necessarily be on a team there.
Representative Seaton.
I'm confused.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I guess that was my understanding as well, is that for the public schools, the previous bill said that a student wasn't guaranteed a slot on the team, but he was guaranteed that he could participate. And I'm reading the language here on page 2, and I don't see where we are making a distinction. It's on line 9, it says, you know, that basically a full-time student is eligible to participate in any interscholastic activity program available in a religious or private school regulated under this chapter. So to me, I see the same wording and the same requirement that you indicated in the public schools, that there is not an option for a public school to take that person, but that it is required. And if you go down to section B, it says a student is eligible to participate in interscholastic activities if the student, you know, is otherwise eligible to participate. This is one, activities requirements established by the school and the statewide interscholastic activities governing body. So it doesn't say that on a case-by-case basis they may take or may not take, but if they are taking any students, do they need to take all students, or do we have a selective section as you interpret this bill, and what would be required? And I hope that question is clear enough. I'm trying to distinguish. If you believe that the past bill that we said didn't guarantee him a slot on the team, but did give him, guarantee them the ability to participate,
to apply
and participate, and if we have the same thing here, I don't see the distinction between us not imposing on private schools what we imposed on public schools, that they must make available those opportunities to students that are really not in their, not enrolled in their school. And so if you could lead me through that, I'd appreciate it.
And Representative Seaton, the question is for whom?
Well, we have us on board, and they're the one that said that they interpreted the bill that was passed last year as guaranteeing a homeschooler's right to participate, but not guaranteeing them, you know, the first team or on the varsity team, but that they could participate in activities in the public schools, and I see the same requirement here, and I'm not sure we want to do that.
And Asa, if you'll hold just a moment. Senator Dyson.
Yeah. It's a good question. There's two things going on here. If you'll see page 1, line 7, it says next to the last word, it says they're eligible. Same phrase over on line 9 on page 2. Says the kid is eligible. Doesn't mean, just because they're eligible to participate at a school doesn't mean the school has to participate or allow them to participate. And of course, if they do participate, it doesn't guarantee they're going to make the team or the band. So what we're doing here is it eliminates that bar of eligibility for that student. But in my understanding, it's still permissive for the school. And school may be overwhelmed with not having, with students or a particular activity, a band or whatever. They don't have the instruments, they don't have whatever. So this just removes the eligibility bar, and then it's up to the school. Then after that, it's up to the student's talent or perseverance or whatever. Did I get that right?
Asa, are you there?
Yes. Through the chair, there were two questions. First of all, schools don't have the authority to decide on their own whether to accept a student as an eligible or ineligible student. they have to follow the state rules, the rules that ASWA has adopted for all schools in the state. So a school has to be within the bylaws, within the policies and so forth. And so I'll interpret these right now and tell you, explain why I said what I said in the past. Public high schools, most public high schools have attendance areas or an area in which students can select their school. If they live nearby, that is the school. Some districts have methods where a student may attend another school. This is for attendance purposes. For another school not near their home, and some schools have processes. Some schools have open enrollment, but most high schools establish some kind of a criteria for which student can attend that based on where they live. Public schools or private schools, on the other hand, do not have attendance areas. They are community-wide. In Anchorage, there are a number of private high schools, and any kid who lives anywhere in Anchorage who has the money and can get accepted can attend that private school, any one of them private schools. So it's a little bit different, situation. Senate Bill 119 specifically said a student is eligible at the school which the school student would normally attend if the student were attending a public school. And there's a provision in there for a student to request a different school if the school district approves. In this one, Senate Bill 641, it doesn't talk about what school a school student would normally attend. I'm looking at page 2. It says, line 6, a full-time student is eligible who is enrolled in grades 9 through 12 in an alternative education program located in the state, does not offer interscholastic activities, is eligible to participate in any interscholastic activities program available in a religious or other private school regulated by this chapter, that the student would be eligible to attend. A student can attend any school, any private school, so that's wide open. The student were not enrolled in an alternative education program. And in the next line, 13, at which the student requests to participate if the administrator of the school approves. That is not in Senate Bill 119. The school administrator does not have to approve. If the student wants to attend a school other than the one, wants to participate in a school other than the one he or she would normally attend, then the administrator has to approve. But for a student to select his or her school of eligibility based on where he lives under Senate Bill 119, the school or the administrator does not have to approve that. That's why I made the distinction earlier in my comments.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems to me that it should say where they normally would attend. Otherwise, they can pick out what school they want to go to, and I would think that this would make sense if they're in the area of the school where they normally would go, but they're going to a private school somewhere else. They still probably should be, you know, just for purposes of getting there easy and getting to all the activities and stuff, it should be within their normal school district. Now, am I thinking wrong?
No. Senator Dyson.
Go ahead. Madam Chair, this is Joshua Banks for the record. Through Chair, Representative Wilson, we're making this bill to be similar to how it would be for normal education. If, say, you had a student that lived in our district in Chugiak and they wanted to attend Anchorage Christian School in Midtown Anchorage, I believe it's Midtown. It's in Anchorage, and if if their parents wanted to drive them out that far to go to school, then I mean they're perfectly within their rights to do that. So this is similar with interscholastic activities. If they're willing to drive their kids out that far, then that's perfectly fine.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, Senator Dyson, through the chair, as the gentleman from Aswa just said, private schools, virtually by their nature, are not limited to students from a geographical area. And we have public schools, too, in the Anchorage area. They're stellar. You know, a school for very brainy kids, and that draws them all over the city. But private schools, their attendance is not defined by geography. And Josh is right. If parents want to take their kids over to Stellar or ride the city buses, that's their option. That's why this is different. And ASA wisely points that out.
Follow up, Representative Wilson.
Okay, so we're changing the rules. Regular kids that don't go to a private school have to go to the and compete in the school where they live. But now we're going to say that if you're in a private school or religious school, you can go, you can participate anywhere you want.
Yes, and the only Dyson, yes, but it, the only thing is that in a regular school neighborhood skill, there is a waiver process where a student can get permission to do that. But you're exactly right.
Okay.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope I can bring a little clarity, just kind of bring us forward. I'm looking at the text of Senate Bill 119 last year. Under this law, which goes into effect July 1st, the situation is this. If a homeschool student wants to participate in an interscholastic activity at their local attendance area, they can do so if they're otherwise eligible, if their grades are up and the school meets ASA's requirements. There is an alternative situation, as Senator Dyson said. If that student who is homeschooled wants to participate in interscholastic activities at a school outside of his attendance area, he can do so if, A, he shows good cause, you know, good reason why, and the governing body of the school approves. It's not a slam dunk, so they've got to be approved. What this bill does, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it allows students who are homeschooled to participate in interscholastic activities at a private or denominational school anywhere inside the district. They're not bound to their local attendance area. And again, because the nature of a private school is that they're, the area from which they draw is district-wide, city-wide, that's why there's no limitation.
But on that very point, Madam Chairman.
Please, Representative Wilson.
On that very point, we're now saying that public school kids can't do it, but if you're rich enough to go to a private school, you can go anywhere you want. Is that what we're saying?
Madam Chair, if I can answer this question. Please. Joshua Banks, for the record. Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, the in Senate Bill 119 that was passed last year, it states that a homeschooled student is eligible to participate based on the residence of the parent or legal guardian. The student would be eligible to attend for the student not enrolled in an alternative education program. And if you look at Section 3 under paragraph A1, it says that a student is eligible to participate at a school that a student would be eligible to attend were the student not enrolled in an alternative education program. So it's really the same. If they weren't enrolled in an alternative education program, they'd either go to the public school that they live in the district. If they're going to school
so we're not giving private school participation. We're not giving them an advantage that public school kids can't have.
Yeah. Senator Dyson, to the chair. What the law says, passed and with this in place, whatever the eligibility requirements for a particular school, in this case the non-traditional homeschool kid, would have been eligible to go to that private school or to Stellar or other magnet schools and so on and so forth. So it's the eligibility rules of the particular school. In general, the grade schools want, elementary schools all over want kids from the neighborhood. And if it happens to be an ABC school, which you're inordinately, they can move it, go there, but that meets the ABC school's rules of eligibility. You can come there from outside of district. The private schools, some of them may have geographical limitations. Most of them say, y'all come.
I can't. Just tell me yes or no. Are we going to now be giving private school people advantages that public schools don't have? Yes or no?
No. The exact thing is it's their eligibility rules. They can divine.
So it is possible.
Yes.
So we are, then, yes, we are giving them opportunities that public school kids can't have. That's what I just need to know. Yes or no?
Representative Sadler, can you help us?
If I may, I hope I can. As I understand your question, Representative Wilson, you want to make sure that someone is not allowed to attend any public school, any place they want to, if they're currently in a private school. Is that your question?
Yes.
Okay. The answer is, as Senator Dyson says, no. What this bill would do is it would allow a student who is homeschooled to participate in interscholastic activities in a private or denominational school. Not to go to, you know, Big Walnut Tech.
And for the record, I know that we have gone over our time, but I think this is important enough for our sports season coming up that if it just takes us a couple more minutes, I think if you'll indulge me, let's stay those couple more minutes. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had two things. First of all, I just wanted to clarify, and I see it on page 2, line 13, that if the administrator of the school approves. And for clarity, that is there. I just want to make sure that we're talking about a case-by-case basis. So if they open the chess team to people, they can say, yes, I'll take you on the chess team, and no, I will not take you on the chess team, on any criteria that the private school wants to allow that participation. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator Dyson. Yes, it is. I'm sure that they would do it in conformity with their own policy and so on. But
well, I was just wanting to make sure that we realized what we were doing was not saying that. I mean, they still have the ability to discriminate on many different grounds in a private school. That's what a private school gets to do, whether it's on religion or other grounds for taking students. And I just want to make sure that we all understand the bill. And the other thing that I wanted to do is we keep talking about homeschool kids that are homeschooled, but this does not address all homeschool kids. This only addresses, on page 2, lines 29 and 30, a homeschool program that is accredited by a recognized accrediting body. So we have lots of homeschool kids across the state, and I just want the public to be aware this is not going to address those kids. It's only those kids if they are homeschooled through a program that is accredited somewhere by either a state or a regional or national program. And just, I mean, because we keep talking about homeschool kids, and we're not talking about all homeschool kids, we're talking about only those that are in these accredited programs. So thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, and that's your interpretation.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any more? Representative Reinbold.
Okay. I just want to say that I think the intent, I see ASA has a letter of support here. I think this is, the intention of the bill is to encourage sports and band. And I believe that this helps homeschoolers and others interact with their peers. And it empowers the parents to get their kids involved in sports and music. I think there's plenty of checks and balances in place, and I fully support this.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Very briefly, my support for Senate Bill 119 last year was predicated in part on the fact that parents of homeschoolers did pay property taxes that did support the local public schools. I have a question or concern whether the students, parents of students who are homeschooled, accredited homeschools, as Senator Seaton says, will be paying support for the private schools or religious schools to which the kids want to attend. I will assume that the administrators of those private or religious schools will have provisions for the expense of that, and that's the decision to accept them that they will make, knowing that there might be some cost involved.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, you're exactly correct.
Good. Glad to hear that.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is just a homeschooled student that wants to go to a public, or not a public, a private or a religious school. We're not even talking about public schools.
That's correct. The public school thing was done last year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
And I'm pretty sure you voted for it.
And so I'm hearing this is pretty much a fix, is what it is. It's an addition to what you did last year and a fix. With that, we'll move into public testimony. I don't have anybody signed up, but I do want to make sure that there's nobody in the audience that wanted to testify to this. With that in mind, I'd like to take a brief at ease before we move this bill forward. Okay, we'll go back on the record. And what is the will of the committee? Do we want to move this bill forward? Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I want to make sure that it's really clear on the record, at least for this bill, that on page 2, line 14, and I'd like to get the sponsor's concurrence in this, that the interpretation where it says, if the administrator of a school approves, that means that the school can apply any criteria that the school is allowed to employ. In other words, anything that's not prohibited under the Constitution for the private school, for their determinations, that they are able to use those determinations to approve or disapprove. So I just want to get that on the record.
Senator Dyson, any comments?
Well, I'm sorry. Were you going to bend it? Or just put it on the record?
I'm just trying to put it on the record and get the concurrence of the sponsor that is the interpretation that the sponsor is intending and that the committee is acting
on. I agree. We agree. Sponsor agrees.
Got it. Public testimony has been closed, and with that in mind, what's the will of the committee? Shall we move this forward? Representative Sadler.
Madam Chair, if it's your will, I would make a motion. I move that the Education Committee pass sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 41, version 28 LS0329/uniform from committee with zero fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Seeing no objection, this bill will move out of committee. Let me remind you that we will... We still have House Bill 151. Public testimony has been closed, and we'll hear that again. And we'll meet again next Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. And with that, if you'll stay to finish our paperwork, the Education Committee is now adjourned at 10:15.